Thanks again for joining me. Let's jump right into our podcast. As a matter of providing some background, tell me what Evelyn's current situation is right now.
Currently, my mom is 68 years old, and she is experiencing a condition called frontal temporal lobe dementia. And she was initially diagnosed 2 years ago with Alzheimer's, and over the period of time and the progression of her condition, we got a more specific diagnosis of this frontal temporal lobe degeneration, or dementia. FTD is another name for it, where she is currently experiencing difficulty with language. She is experiencing difficulty with recognizing objects, and she's experiencing difficulty with her ADLs, or her daily activities, brushing her teeth, picking out clothing, putting the clothing on, and so forth.
Okay, thank you for that. And she's currently in one of our memory care facilities, which is a locked, secured facility, obviously because of her progressing dementia. I want to go back a little bit before you even started to think about this. When you first started seeing signs of Evelyn's, you know, disease progressing, what made you first start to think about residential care as an option for you?
Well, initially when the diagnosis took place, my mom was able to communicate. 2 years ago, she understood that she has this condition, and it was very devastating to the family, to say the least. And right away, I said, "Mom, don't worry, I've got your back. You will never go into a home. I'm gonna take care of you." And I just went into rescue mode and started to take over with helping her with getting to the doctors. And we started out with trying some natural things to slow the progression down. And so after about a year of that, the condition, of course, continued to progress, and I had to do more and more. She started out being at home, and I would go and help her in her home. And that ended up eventually being where she'd come and spend a night or two in my home. And a night or two turned into a week. A week turned into a month. And I'm the only daughter, and so I was primarily rendering all of the assistance that she needed.
Okay, so that's something new that I have not heard in any of our podcasts before, which is that even though you saw this disease coming down the road, there was no thought or consideration to any kind of outsourced assisted living or anything like that. It's basically, we're going to take care of her, and that I'm going to take care of her. That's the end of the story.
Exactly.
Okay, so now jump forward a little bit. What started to happen and that got you thinking, well, maybe I can't do this all by myself?
Well, when it's a loved one, not only are you're going to experience the physical, you know, situation where it's going to be physically demanding to show up and do everything they need. I didn't expect the emotional toll that it would take, because right before my eyes, here I'm watching this woman that has always been the matriarch of the family, always been the person that everyone would go to for advice and just a comforting word, now no longer able to provide that. So emotionally, I would have periods of just feeling so sad and so hurt, more for her.
Right.
And so that was beginning to be difficult to watch.
So you were experiencing severe emotional distress, And I would imagine now that you're doing all this caregiving, you started to experience physical distress as well.
Exactly.
Was there something in particular that happened that, you know, a fall, a burn, something like that, where you said, I've got to think of doing something now. I can't wait any longer.
There was a situation where she had gone into her restroom. My husband and I had a room built in our home just for her, where we put a bathroom that was handicap accessible because we're going to do this for the duration is our thought.
Sure.
And she had gone into her bathroom and she walked right past the toilet and over into the shower area and just sat down in thin air and just hit the floor. And I only knew that because I didn't watch her do it, but we had a camera in her bedroom so that I could check in on her without actually going in and disturbing her during the night. And so I played it back and I saw what happened. And when I attempted to get her up, I don't know how long she'd been there, because when I found her, it was in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Probably, you know, 7:30, 8 o'clock the next morning. And so when I attempted to get her up, she wouldn't stand. It was like she didn't know how to bend her legs and how to get up from the floor.
Mm-hmm. So that was horrifying, I'm sure, to see that happen on film and then not know how long she was there.
Yes.
So that incident probably then spurred you to action at that point. Is
yes.
that so? Tell me about, because up to this point, you're thinking, we're going to take care of it, we're going to handle it, and then this thing happens, and you're going, oh my gosh, we can't necessarily do it the way we thought we were going to do it. When you started to look for solutions for outsourcing, you know, this help that you needed, what did you do? Did you talk to friends? Did you talk to coworkers, church members? Tell me a little bit about how you started your research.
Well, initially, my thought was, let's keep it in the family. Let me talk to different family members to see if they would be willing to take a night or a shift, so to speak, and just give me a little bit of relief. And we tried that for a little while. I have an older brother, and he and his wife agreed to take her for a few days of the week. And so she would go to their home and spend a few days there and then come back to my home. And what happened there is that there was my sister-in-law or me. There wasn't, we didn't have any one really helping us with the task of getting my mom, you know, dressed and fed and bathed and so forth. So there was still just the one person on duty, so to speak, whenever she'd be in our care. And so that only lasted about 3 months, and then she was back with me.
Okay.
Full time.
All right.
So.
Okay. So how did you start to, so at this point you've actually gone through several steps of trying to keep it in-house, so to speak, and you're realizing that it's just not happening the way you think it should or could, and so now you start to think about going out for some help. Who do you talk to? Where do you go? Do you go online? Do you call up friends? I mean, what do you do?
Well, I did talk to some friends. I have a couple of friends who's actually had family members come here to ICC.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
That's helpful.
And, yes. And so the first friend that recommended that I come here, I really respect, and I know that they would not be recommending a place that wasn't, you know, a good place. And so I did come and check it out. But I still was not ready to give my mother over to strangers, so to speak. And and another concern of mine was my mom's awareness of her environment. And I didn't want her to feel like I was throwing her away, so to speak, or that I was getting tired of her and wanted mm-hmm. her to move out. Mm-hmm.
How did you, you know, you used a lot of action words there in terms of, you know, throwing her away how did you feel at that time? I mean, did you feel like overwhelmingly guilty? Did you feel like a little relief? Maybe tell me about how you felt during that time.
Guilty is probably the easiest way to describe it. Just kind of not only guilt, but maybe a little bit of, like maybe I wasn't trying hard enough. Like maybe I was just, you know, being selfish for not just, you know, doing it for as long as I could and for as much as I could. So
how did it impact your life when you were caring for her? What kind of things, you know, obviously you said I couldn't just continue to do it. Mm-hmm. Why not? What, for our listeners, why not? What was happening in your life that said, I literally can't do this all by myself?
Well, physically, I'm a healthy person. Yeah. So on the outside, I just looked like I got this. There's no problem. I'm not suffering from any physical conditions that would prevent me from caring for her. Mm-hmm. But the stress and the worry and the... and just the anxiety of just wanting to do a good job. I would think, you know, she deserves the best. She's always been there for the whole family. Now mm-hmm. it's her turn to be taken care of. Mm-hmm. And I just did not want to fail. So there was, you know... I'm trying to keep it together.
Okay, we're back, folks. We took a short break. As many of you are aware, it's not an easy subject to talk about always, but I think by doing so, we can help each other along the way. Let me go back to build on one of your answers, Stephanie. You had talked about, on the one hand, feeling guilty that you were, you know, perhaps throwing your mom away. But on the other hand, you had some concerns about how well you could actually do the job. So you have these conflicting emotions happening. Mm-hmm. When you finally started to, you know, get to the point where you're going to make a decision, how did one overcome the other? Or how did they resolve? Or did they ever resolve? Are you still trying to resolve them?
You know, I really gave some long and hard, serious thought to what she needed, because I started to realize that a big part of this was not only what my mom was going through with the disease, but also struggling with my own emotions about it. And so I didn't want to make it about me. I started to think about her. And so I realized that I could not provide the skilled care that she needed. And that's saying a lot, because I did have, up and until 6 months ago, a certification as a nurse's aide mm-hmm. that I got in Colorado before moving here.
Okay.
And so I've worked in a skilled environment.
Right.
I have the training, which really made me feel like I got this and I can do it. Mm-hmm. But when it's all on you, or it was all on me, and struggling with the emotional part of it that you might not feel when you're working a job, mm-hmm. That's where I realized that for my mom to get the best care, she needed to be in an environment that provided more skilled nursing.
That's interesting the way you put that. I've heard during other interviews that the care gets to be so intense emotionally and physically for some of our older folks. Stephanie's very young and vibrant, by the way, just so you have a point of reference. And they stop being daughters in your case, or they stop being wives or husbands or whatever, because they literally become a caregiver and nothing else.
Yes.
Did you have that experience, or were you still able to maintain a kind of mother-daughter relationship? Because sometimes, because a lot of times they don't want to do what they needed. I don't want to take a bath,
yeah,
or I don't want to eat. And you're like, mm-hmm, no, you're going to eat right, uh-huh, now. And so that causes like a really, you know, it's a difficult situation. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, the roles did start to turn, and I began to be more of the mother-daughter, and I had to fight with changing the way we communicated. Mm-hmm. I'd go into this baby talk with her, and then I thought, okay, you know, that's not good. That's not what she needs. Mm-hmm. And so I would have to correct myself. But mm-hmm, but yes, she started... what's wonderful about my mom is so far she's very, very sweet, and she's non-combative, and she cooperates really well.
Mm-hmm.
But I started to feel bad because I was always the heavy.
Yeah.
I was the one who was, okay, we're going to take a shower. Come on, let's get this done. And it started to be, mm-hmm, more of, because we needed to do the caring part, that there was no mother-daughter fun,
right,
stuff.
Yes.
So
yes,
that was difficult.
That's also a kind of common refrain. And one of the refrains is that even though it's very difficult to get them here and make the decision, once they're here, you can go back to being a daughter again.
Yes.
And or you know, a spouse or whatever,
mm-hmm,
the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a really great comment. So you were kind of lucky in that you had a referral here of somebody that you respected and trusted, and that held a lot of weight with you. Did you, because that was such a respected person for you, did you have to do a lot of other research, or did you just go, okay, well, let me just go here and that's enough?
I didn't just go with that, uh-huh, referral, because I thought, well, that's your mom, and
right,
you liked it for her. Let me find out what's right for my, uh-huh, mom. And so I checked out some other places, and had even gone through a whole process of getting her admitted into another place, uh-huh, that I thought I really liked. And there was just something that just kept bringing me back over here, and I thought, well, let me just, it's closer to my house, let me just take her with,
mm-hmm,
me and see what her, you know, demeanor is when she's there as a visitor with me.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was helpful.
Okay. How did you find the other contenders during that time? Were you online, or was it strictly word of mouth?
Online. I went online, and then there's a little handbook called, I think it's something like aging.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a whole list. Of places.
How did you narrow down the places that you were going to visit from that? I'm sure the list was pretty broad.
Mm-hmm.
How did you narrow it down to the places that you were going to visit?
Well, I looked at location, of course,
mm-hmm,
and then I looked at reviews that I could go on and online and find from other family members,
mm-hmm,
that had come, and then I just came in to visit.
Okay.
And
okay. How many places would you say you physically visited?
I physically visited 3 places.
Okay. All right. Very good. What was your expectation for what we do in the assisted living business? What did you think it was about before you got here?
Well, I thought that it was going to just be just a place where you'd see a lot of people just kind of sitting around and just, not really being attended to, maybe. So I was just kind of, you know, expecting the worst so that I wouldn't be shocked when,
mm-hmm,
I walked in. And one of my biggest determining factors when I would walk into a place would be the smell.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't want to walk in and smell, cleaner and urine,
mm-hmm,
and there was a place that I went to that that's what I smelled, and and I left.
Okay. Was there one thing that stood out at the other place that you had gone so far down the road with where you go, you know what, I'm not sure that this is right for us? Was it one particular thing or was it a group of things?
It was just that they primarily dealt with memory care, and I thought, well, that's, you know, going to be just for her. So
I was like, almost like a little depressing. Is that what I'm hearing? Is this too much of a good thing?
No, it wasn't closer than this is. So I started to think now a place that would really work for me would be a place that I'd be able to get to quickly.
Sure.
Or if I'm out and about and I want to pop in, I'd be able to do that.
Okay.
Whereas the other location was, you know, about 30 minutes from my house.
All right, fair enough. Once you made the decision to have your mom come and spend some time with us, how was the reality different than the expectation, if at all?
Well, it was very different because it was a very welcoming environment. It was almost like we were coming to someone's home and she was just going to be there as a guest in someone's home. And so it just had a warm, cozy, home-like feel. And that was different. It didn't feel like a cold, long-term stay hospital type environment.
Sure. So in your mind's eye, your expectation was going to be this really cold, gray, bleak, lonely place. And the reality was a little different than that, thankfully. How about with respect to the care or the activities or the thing that, you know, the things that were going on a day-to-day basis?
Mm-hmm. Well, I was really impressed with the staff. Mm-hmm. Everyone was just warm and attentive and, you know, welcoming. And it was like they just took the time to greet us and make us feel like we were welcome and we could come and stay for as long as we wanted. So
wonderful.
That was nice.
Great. Let me ask you this. What were the key things that caused you to say, okay, I'm going to make a decision on behalf of integrated care. I'm going to go with, what kind of key things? Was it the smell? I mean, was it the people moving around? If you recall, was there maybe like the top, you know, two things that you go, yeah, you know what, this feels okay to me. This feels good.
Yeah, it was the, there's so many things all came together.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't
okay.
Just one thing. It smelled good.
Uh-huh.
The staff was very warm and seemed very capable and very, might have to pause.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. All right, we're back. Brief commercial break. Okay, so jumping right back in, Stephanie, you were talking about how it wasn't just one thing that made your decision for you. It was a host of things all coming together at one time.
Mm-hmm.
That's good to know. Once you had made the decision, we talked about, you know, the feelings of kind of feeling guilty and you know, maybe a little bit of relief because now you know she's going to get the care that you weren't able to do just as a single person, rightfully so. How long did it take once she was here visiting with us and being with us, how long did it take for you and or her to get comfortable with this and go, okay, well, maybe this isn't as bad as I thought it was going to be, or maybe this feels like home? How long was that process?
It was only maybe a couple of days.
Uh-huh.
Because my idea was that she'd come and stay a night or two, and then I'd take her home
uh-huh.
for a night or two, and then I'd bring her back for a night. I didn't just want her to feel abandoned.
Oh, good idea.
And so after a night or two, I thought, well, maybe you should stay a night or two more. You're doing really well. Everyone's getting to know you. You're getting to know them. And so she stayed, for the first time, she stayed 7 days straight. And so she did really well, and I could tell, even though she couldn't tell me how her experience was, I could see by her disposition that it was good, because okay. she was, more talkative, and she was, as much as she could, she was trying to communicate in a upbeat way.
Mm-hmm. Did your emotional trajectory follow hers, or were you still kind of like a little down?
No, it did. And what I really appreciated was I was told right away, you can call us as mm-hmm. much as you want, anytime you want. And I did. I called a few times, and she'd be asleep, and I'm like, okay, is she sleeping? Okay. You know, how's she sleeping? Uh-huh. They're like, she's fine. And then the next morning, is she awake? Okay. How'd she do last night? And so I just kept being reassured that she was fine. And it was from everyone who was on shift. They were all very, very warm and just considerate and forthcoming with the information that I wanted. And
That's wonderful to hear. Stephanie, I'd like to kind of wrap up the podcast with a summation from you. And that would be, imagine a real close friend comes to you and says, hey, my mom just had a real serious fall and I can't take care of her anymore. What do you think I should do? Tell me what you would say to that close friend now that you've kind of been through this gauntlet. I mean, it is, the industry is a gauntlet, because there's a lot mm-hmm. of, there's some people that do it real good. There's some people that, you know, don't do it so good. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm using that word because that's, and I, you know, it really runs the whole range mm-hmm. of services and quality of service. Mm-hmm. What would you tell that close friend?
I would tell them that they could come on by and meet with one of the personnel here and get all the information mm-hmm. That they need to find out about integrated care communities. Mm-hmm. I would tell them to go on the website mm-hmm. and look at the different comments or the different pictures and photos of the community. And I would just tell them that my experience has been nothing but good from day one. I haven't gotten conflicting messages. It was good from the beginning, and it is continuing to be good as you know, the days are going on. Mm-hmm. And so,
how would you tell them to deal with the you know, inevitably tough emotions that they're gonna have, they're gonna have? It's not gonna mm-hmm. be a question of if, but only when.
I would tell them just to be open about how they're feeling. Mm-hmm. If they have questions, ask those questions. I did that with the staff here. I asked, well, you know, how do you guys do this? And well, can we do it this way? Or so it's more of a partnership, not you're handing over your loved one to integrated care communities and they're going to take over from here and do things their way. I appreciated that I was able to tell them what's been working for us and even tell them the things that she liked and how she would respond the best. Mm-hmm. And so I felt like I was just getting an extended family type of situation mm-hmm. By having her here.
Fantastic. Well, thanks again, Stephanie, so much for joining us today. I'm sure this will be very incisive and helpful to a lot of families that are going to go through this, you know, similar thing. So thanks so much on behalf of them.
You're welcome.